Good morning. This is a privilege. I always enjoy meeting many new people. There's a few people here that I knew before and haven't met for a very long time, so I'm looking forward to these couple of days. And I will be using a little bit of that break time. So I was counting on 45 minutes, so there's a little problem. We'll make some compromises and also take a little bit of that time. In these sessions, we will be looking at communication and effective communication, building effective communication skills. We all know how to communicate already. We learned that rather young. We learned how to yell for things at a pretty young age, and eventually also learned that that's not the best way to communicate, or I hope we learned that quite well. And probably also are all aware that in the normal run of things, we don't have to put a lot of thought into our communication. We can just do it. It's pretty easy to ask if the coffee's ready yet. It's pretty easy to ask what time we were supposed to be there. It's pretty easy to ask what the weather forecast is to be. Or it's pretty easy to ask, could you move that for me, please? We do these things all the time. And I'm not really going to be talking about that normal, not really thought through communication. However, what gets us into trouble is when we didn't notice or didn't realize that we've moved from that kind of communication to communication that has a lot more consequences or is a lot trickier or needs more care. And so I would hope that through these sessions we learn a little bit more about what is all going on when we are talking with people and what is going on in our mind, what is going on in their mind when we are communicating. And I hope that we can first understand the moral and ethical implications of our communication, and second, that we become more mindful of what we are saying and how we are saying it. We become more careful, and that we spend a little bit more of our energy assessing whether our communication is working or not working as we go. Some people can communicate at great length and not realize that something is not working in this communication or in this exchange. They never catch on. That's too bad, for sure. Because the exchange can go on to actually be damaging and hurtful, and the parties involved, or at least one party involved, is not aware of that. So I hope that we can increase our awareness of the process and our ability to be aware and mindful when we're in the middle of communication as well. Communication without mindfulness or carefulness can be, at best, ineffective. It doesn't work as well as it could or as efficiently as it could. And at worst, it can be destructive and set up damage that can take a long time to work through or work past. In our session today, I want to talk about what is happening when we are communicating with people. And we are going to spend more of our time talking about the players in communication, the people involved, and what is happening in our minds when we are communicating with people. And then we'll spend a day talking about general communication processes. I'm going to use the word rules, do's and don'ts, I guess, or things to keep in mind. Just in general, this could include communication at home, at church, anywhere you go with your friends, your children if you have them, your siblings. It's going to be general ideas about communication. And then we'll move to communication in the classroom itself, teacher, student, faculty, board communications. And then the last day, I would like to look at specific context. Communication in the tricky areas, perhaps. Communication with a student that needs help or needs discipline. Communication with faculty, board members, parents. And we'll look at more specific situations and some pitfalls perhaps to avoid, or some things we can do to help those situations go a lot better. I would like to read a verse every morning, and this morning I'm going to read from Proverbs 25, verse 11. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. In other words, it's a good thing. A word fitly spoken is a word that is spoken at the right time, that is spoken the right way. And that's a beautiful thing. We pretty much entirely, but not entirely, build our relationships by communication. If you think about that, I'm not sure what other methods we have. Our actions certainly affect our relationships, but one of the main actions that we engage in our relationships is this action. And so we build our relationships and we destroy our relationships through our communication. So we want to keep that in mind. All of us know that our relationships with other human beings are one of the most important things that we have here. Our relationships with other human beings. Cut yourself off from them by poor or mindless communication and you have lost more than you can imagine. I have lost more than I can imagine. More than I know, usually. So let's go straight into what I've called the anatomy of communication. What's happening? Who's involved? How does this work? Basically, this is not going to be very detailed, but I just want to set that because most of the reason we are mindless in our communication is because we don't think about the process. We usually think about ourselves when we're communicating. That's automatic. I'm thinking about what I want to say. I'm thinking about how I'm going to get them to agree with me. I'm thinking about how I'm going to change their mind, maybe. I'm thinking about their clothing. I'm thinking about a lot of things when I'm talking to that person. I'm thinking about what their face looks like. It's why I look at their face, or should, when I'm communicating. But a lot of that is just on my side. I'm thinking about my side of it. And I'd like to really push us to think about, when we're communicating, to realize that there is another side that is equally as large and complex and usually doing pretty much the same things we're doing. They're looking at our clothing or our face, or they're looking at, or they're thinking about what we, the emotional state we seem to be in. They're processing all of these things as well. So there's at least as much going on in the other person's head as is going on in our head when we're communicating. But how many times do we think about that? How many times are we completely taken up with what's going on in our mind in the middle of this communication, in the middle of this conversation, and don't really think about how much might be going on in the mind of the person that we're speaking with? So I want to just raise awareness of what all is going on here. There is a lot more going on in even ordinary communication than what we are aware of or than what we think of. And truth be told, we can't think of everything that's going on necessarily, but it is useful to think of a little bit more than we might when we just communicate by default or without thinking. I had thought of taking time to put a big sketch up on the board. I am going to pass on that time. I think some of these concepts are easy enough to imagine without that. So I hope you're okay. First of all, there's two players in any communication. I know when we're sitting in a circle and we're having a group conversation, there are more. But there's a speaker. There's always a speaker. There's somebody that's initiating or talking at the time. And then there's a receiver. And if you're in a group, there's five receivers. If you're speaking one-on-one, there's one receiver. But whether it's one receiver or five, that I'm just going to refer to as the receiver of the dialogue. So we have these two people. I already suggested that they're both complex and their heads or their brains are working quite full-time when there's a conversation going on. Of course, some of us have attention issues and our brain is working full-time, just not entirely working on what's coming our way from that speaker. And that is perhaps something we should address in this class as well. But still, there's a lot going on. Also, both the sender and the receiver is sending and receiving verbal and nonverbal ideas. Some of the verbal, of course, is the words that we're saying. The nonverbal is all the rest of it. And our minds pick up on nonverbal cues, usually subconsciously or mostly subconsciously. We know almost immediately when somebody walks into the room what emotional state they are in. How did we figure that out so quickly? And if we were to sit down and write out all the things we noticed that led us to that conclusion, we probably wouldn't come up with very many, but we're pretty sure our first evaluation is fairly accurate. There's so much that happens subconsciously in that. Well, this is subconscious reading of a person is happening all the time. It's nonverbal, but it's happening all the time when we're in conversation. We see many things that we aren't naming. We don't have an exact word or description for what we saw, but it is influencing what we're all getting from that person. It's influencing how we're receiving that. So there's the sender sending verbal and nonverbal messages over to the receiver. And as the receiver is listening, if he or she is listening, instead of thinking about what they're going to say in response, that person is listening and evaluating not only what the person is saying, but why are they saying this way? And you know the feeling. Somebody's saying something, you're not even really hearing their words, you're trying to figure out why they're saying this. Why are they telling me this now? Or where are they headed with this? What's happening? Why did they say that? So there is this evaluation happening as they receive the communication. And that evaluation is not simply a cognitive evaluation of the words that that person is saying. It is much, much more than that. Is that person respecting me with what they are saying? Is that person hinting at something that they are not willing to say with words? Are they suggesting that I was lazy or I didn't do my job right? What are they really saying, and what does that mean about me? That is usually going on in the receiver's head at some level. Why are they saying that? What are they really meaning? What are they not saying with words, and why? And what does that mean about me? So there is this sort of self-feedback or self-talk going on in our head as we are listening to that person. Some of that self-talk is self-talk or evaluation of us. What must they think of me saying this? Or why did they think I needed to hear that? That's talking about us, thinking about ourselves. Some of the self-talk is thinking about them. Why are they saying this? What's going on in their world or in their mind that they are choosing to say this to me now? What is their problem? Sometimes we're thinking that when we're listening to them. Or we're thinking, here we go again. Right? This is all evaluation of the person that's speaking. Or we're thinking, but they don't understand. Or they don't know what they're talking about. Goes on in our head as we listen to the message coming toward us. All kinds of things having to do with us. What must they think of us? Or why are they saying that? What is it about me that made them say that to me now? And we're thinking about them. Why are they saying that again? Or maybe we know these people and we have a stock evaluation of here we go again. Or that's not fair, maybe. Or maybe we like that person and we think, automatically, that's a wonderful idea. And we haven't actually evaluated the words they were saying all that much. But we've come up with all kinds of stuff in our head about this situation. It is even possible to project an evaluation onto the speaker. Maybe we are anxious and afraid about something, and we see that speaker as anxious and afraid, when they may not be at all, but that is what we're projecting or perceiving on them. Perhaps we have lost our patience with the situation and we project that onto the person that's speaking. I'm about the end of the rope. They probably are too, or they must be, and that's why they're saying this. But maybe not at all. Maybe not at all. Maybe we are very disgruntled or dissatisfied about a situation and we assume they are as well. But maybe not at all. However, if we assume that, it is definitely going to shape our perception of what they're saying. We're going to hear different things from them if that's what we're projecting onto them. So all of this is happening. And I was saying that the receiver is perhaps doing all these things in their head. But as soon as it's the receiver's turn to speak, then the roles are switched, right? And then there's the verbal and nonverbal going back to the original speaker. And that person is doing all of these self-evaluations, evaluations of the speaker and all of that as well. So this is what happens in one, happens in the other, and it's a back and forth. They both are doing this. Now, in between these two people or players that are sending messages, verbal and nonverbal, back and forth to each other, what's bridging that basically is our five senses. We're hearing, we're seeing, all of that. This is what's allowing us to see and to hear what they are saying or trying to say or not saying or implying. And the problem is that our senses can be distracted, or you can have a distortion, or some often referred to as noise can set up shop in between. This could be actual noise. We can't even hear. There's something else going on that's distracting us. And if we are easily distracted, then this is a big problem in communication. We normally communicate with our five senses, but there's something else there's noise that's interfering with this communication. And if you're like me and your eyes go to the noise everywhere, always, and you're trying to speak with somebody after church, and I have to really tell myself to keep looking at this person because there's something else over there. And of course, it's rude if you're communicating with somebody but you're off here with your eyes. But there can be all kinds of noise or distractions that can interfere with that, those five senses working well in that communication. So we just need to be aware of that. Sometimes communication breaks down because there was a significant distraction going on. That distraction can be outside of us, of the two players, or it can be inside the two players. One major distraction that can keep us from communicating well is if we are upset. Emotions can create an inner distraction to the communication. We don't hear what they're saying. We're not reading the signs well because we are upset about something, perhaps. Or maybe we are afraid of something. And in those, or with those emotions, sometimes we completely misunderstand what the person was saying. And it's not really because they didn't choose good words or they didn't say it clearly. It's because there was a serious distraction going on. Maybe it was in our own mind at the time. The fascinating thing about this process, I think, is that we have brains that can formulate sentences that are generally grammatically correct. We can choose from a larger or smaller vocabulary, but a lot of words, to say the least. We formulate these words to communicate to each other at a breath. We sip in air and we talk. When you are in conversation with somebody, how many paragraphs ahead are you thinking? What's your sentence structure you've worked out five sentences down the road? We don't. We structure our sentence when we grab air to say it, not much before. Now, generally, we might be considering what we don't want to say, what we want to avoid here. We're trying to be careful with our words. But your actual words are chosen in an instant, and we're going back and forth. And so I bring that out because our frame of mind in a conversation is really important. It's going to influence the words we grab in the moment that it is our turn to speak. And if we're in a conversation with a group, and you need to force your sentence in there in the split second that somebody was quiet in order to have a chance to say anything, then we really are grabbing words quickly. So frame of mind is important. What's going on with us in a conversation is important because we are not going to be, often are not going to have the luxury of choosing words very, very carefully and slowly and thinking about the structure of that sentence two or three times before we talk. That would be awkward communication, to say the least. We like to go back and forth comfortably. Now, for the rest of this time, I would like to talk more about what's going on with the speakers, the senders and receivers in any given communication process. I want to look at this so that we understand what's going on in our own head and our own emotions as we communicate, but also I want us to become aware of or remember that the same things are going on in the head of the person with whom we are speaking. We, like I said earlier, can forget that so quickly. And we just think they are this shape that's taking our words. And we really like if they understand us. And if they don't understand us, then this shape, it's probably their fault. This object that we were putting words toward, it's probably their fault they didn't understand us. We can be very sort of one-dimensional or two-dimensional, certainly not three-dimensional, when we think about the other person in a relationship or in a communication. So I am going to speak in the third person for this. These are two actors in a communication scenario. I'll speak in the third person. Maybe all of us will be just a tad more comfortable with that. And by the way, we'll get into this with effective communication. The person in which you speak actually makes a difference. If you are you, that you might as well be pointing all your fingers at them, that second person. So watch out for that. I'm going to just create a little bit of psychological distance and speak in the third person. These are the people who are talking. They. Them. Speakers in a communication or in a dialogue come with a whole set of complex ways of thinking, ways of being, ways of responding. And these are not only, but largely shaped by their experience. And we may have had the opportunity to communicate with people who come from cultures and backgrounds that are very different from our own. And we soon discovered that we are making mistakes. We are saying things that maybe are offending them. We would never have dreamt would offend them. Or we are communicating in a way that they don't align with very well. So the players, the communicators, are shaped by their upbringing and their culture and their experiences. We know this is true. And we also know that negative experiences are the ones that lodge themselves the most deeply and strongly into our perception. And so there are people that we have had to relate to, and it was not a positive relationship, or it was a very difficult one, and we would never name one of our children after them. We just, there's something going on there in our experience that has an association that's not just, no. It's a nice name, but there's a problem here. Or maybe we were taken advantage of, or hurt, or manipulated by somebody that's very charismatic and outgoing. And so when we meet somebody that's just gregarious and outgoing and bubbling all over and in your face and things like that, we're backing away. We don't trust people like that. There was somebody like that, and we learned that you don't get what you see in the end. And so there's an experience that can really inform or shape us when it comes to communicating with people. And I think it's important to be, if we can, to be aware of some of those things, because it's possible that we have a perception that's stock, it's in place because of our experiences, but it's not always accurate or fair, and we need to just become a little bit more aware of that, perhaps. Or maybe we meet somebody that seems aggressive, and that sends us into thinking all kinds of things as they are speaking. The players in any communication are very complex. Human beings just are. And there's a whole set of perceptions and beliefs and emotions that play a role in the communication on both sides. These players have personality. And I'm not going to go into theories of personality, but I think we can all agree that people have some general personality traits, and they vary, they differ quite a lot. And so if you have an extrovert communicating with an introvert, we've got some bridges that need to be built there intentionally, perhaps by both of them, in order for them to be able to communicate well. If you have thinkers and feelers communicating to each other, well, there's a few things can break down, let's just say. So personality matters, and we should be aware of it, but I'm always a little hesitant to go deeply into the personality thing because I think it's easy for us to box people up in a personality, stick them on the shelf with a label, and I don't like that at all. That is basically saying that human beings are not complex and we can figure them out quickly and maybe use whatever we figured out quickly to manipulate them or somehow work with them. I want to be very clear that when I speak about trying to understand that other person and know what their background is or what their personality is, we are not doing anything here to manipulate or control or push people around. And whatever I tell you this week is not intended to make you better at getting your way. That is not the idea. If you are using your communication skills to manipulate people and control people, well, we won't talk about that long. I'll just call it sin and we'll move on. And there are a lot of things we must do about sin. So that is not what we're talking about. I think when we try to understand another person so that we can communicate well, so that our communication doesn't break down and we end up offending, it's the offense and the breakdown that we are trying to avoid. We genuinely want to understand each other. So personality is a factor, but we don't want to put too much in there. Just be aware that personality differences can be a problem or can be something that gets in the way. Remember that both players have a self-concept. We already talked about that. They think about who they are, they know who they are quite deeply, they're afraid of who they are sometimes. There's self-esteem. Everybody has it. When we have too much, there can be issues, of course. That's the ego out of hand. But there is self-esteem. Everybody has it. People have a way of thinking about themselves. And players in any communication seek to protect it. And they like when whatever they think about themselves is affirmed as well. We seek affirmation because of that self-esteem. We can be offended. And maybe it's too strong to say it this way, but I'm going to say it this way anyway. Nearly every conversation or dialogue that we have with somebody either affirms our self-esteem or it challenges it. And I'm not talking about a self-esteem that is out of hand. We all have a self-esteem. We have something we think about ourselves. Something would be pretty broken down if we had no opinion about ourselves at all. We have it. We have that opinion about ourselves. And our conversations, our dialogues, will either affirm that positive opinion or negative opinion or challenge it. And so that's something that's a dynamic that's going on when we are in conversation. These two players are thinking about that, perhaps often subconsciously. I'd like to finish out by saying that there are three basic things that are going on, just to keep it simple. These two players have perception. Perception has to do with how we read things. It's how we read things going in. We have perception. And that perception can be very tricky business. We do not always perceive correctly. In fact, we frequently perceive incorrectly at some level. We read the person incorrectly. We conclude that they meant something that they did not mean. And sometimes we even find ourselves concluding that they meant something completely opposite of what they said. And we're convinced of it. It's what they meant. It's an issue of perception. So things coming in. And then we have cognition. That is what our brain does with the things that came in. How we process it. And then, if we have time, I'll speak about emotion a little bit more, but not much. We already touched on that. Emotion is a big factor in any situation. So, perception. Both players, giver and receiver in this dialogue, are selecting to some extent what they are seeing and receiving. We know this is true because we miss cues. We often miss cues. We misunderstand. We don't take it in correctly. We did not actually see right. We didn't hear right. So we are selective. And I think one reason that we are selective in our perception is because it is more efficient that way. It's faster to pick a couple of things out and go with it. And so our brains are hardwired to be efficient. And when you're in a crowd like this for a couple of days with 100, 200 people, our brains are just struggling to be as efficient as possible with all these new people that we're meeting and the little conversations that we're having. And one way to stay efficient is to select things that are coming in or things to notice and let the rest be. It's automatic. We don't really choose to do this at all. It just happens. We'll compare incoming information with previously learned patterns. This is especially true when we're communicating with people that we know, people that we've been around before. And we can be so fast to say, here we go again. And it might not be a here we go again situation at all. This is different. They have a different problem, but we know them. It's this one. And we immediately, actually, we sort of perceive everything lock, stock, and barrel before they've said anything. We've already figured out what this is about. So we compare incoming information with previously learned patterns or experiences that we had with them. And if that person is behaving differently today, we can miss that difference completely. We don't notice because our brain said, oh, we know what this is like, so here we go. And this is all in the receiving end of it. It's in what we see. And also, just for the sake of staying sane, we like consistency in here. One simple reason that we don't notice or take in a completely different something from this person today is because if we did notice that, we would have a bit of an inconsistency. We had figured out a pattern and now they broke it and we'd have to deal with that. It's easier just to let the pattern continue. Just easier. And besides, then it's not as much trouble up here. We don't have to work that thing out in our brain because there isn't really a dissonance or an inconsistency there. Truth is, we do not like what is often referred to as cognitive dissonance. In other words, competing ideas and information in the brain that are fighting against each other or aren't lining up with each other nicely. It's got a confusion in there. And that's sometimes like a fire that we want to put out. We've got conflicting ideas in our brain and it's not comfortable. And so we try to maybe manipulate something or the other coming in so that they sort of all line up nicely together. Because we don't like too much noise in our brains. We will often listen for things that line up with the biases we already have. Confirming our biases is something we do automatically. We're always doing it. And when we meet somebody that we've known for a long time, we're communicating with them again. We have biases about them, probably, and we're going to pick up on the cues that align with that bias mostly, and we may completely miss the others because we already know what kind of person she is, what kind of person they are. So those biases can be a huge problem. Sometimes we will even make things up in order to line up with the biases we already had. We will imagine that they meant something they didn't mean at all because we expected them to mean that. That's a bias. We expected that from them. And even though they didn't say it, we heard it somehow, something. We confirmed what we expected to hear. Also, players in this communication, we could go into memory and how accurate that is. And have us a couple of long discussions, perhaps. But we can remember things inaccurately. And one of the reasons for this is, if we want to settle the cognitive dissonance and the noise in our brain, and something happened that does not line up with other ideas or perceptions that we have, it is possible to remember something a certain way so that things line up a little bit better and they're not quite as messy in our minds, in our memories. And so we just need to know that this can happen. We remember something. How many of you have been wrong in your first impression about somebody? Okay, good. Now, if we're not willing to let that be, we could remember something about that first impression that we should not be remembering because it actually wasn't accurate anyway. And so, you need to be very careful with that. First impressions are very effective and often mostly correct, but almost never completely correct. And when we continue in conversation or relationship with somebody, we have to always stay open to have that first impression be completely changed and better informed. One of the biggest or quickest things that we can do is attribution. It means they're saying this because. We know why they're saying this. They're saying this because they're angry. Teenagers get this quite wrong. They love, to some extent, this isn't all teenagers, but there's a little bit there in most teenagers, they love frustrating a teacher until he or she loses their cool, loses their calm. And then, what do? Huh, teacher's mad. Really? Is that what it is? Well, maybe. So we need to be careful. But they play with this, and then once they've figured out that they've, and then they can use that, right? Then they can either justify what they're doing, or they can just see what this adult is made of, or whatever. And so they'll attribute to the teacher some kind of great emotion, and it may not even be there. It may be that the teacher's being the adult and saying, "That's enough of that. Absolutely no more." And they'll attribute a very strong negative emotion to that, perhaps. Well, if you did lose your cool truly and you spoke out of hand, then you need to apologize. But anyway, cognition. We expect, these players both expect the other person to get it. They should, right? It made sense in our head, should make sense in their head. And so we expect that, and we're convinced in our head that what we're saying is true, and they should understand that as well, right? Also, we work our minds in the middle of a communication to make sense out of things. None of us likes to work with something that's not making sense, and so we work this really hard to make sense out of. So we actually go beyond first impressions or kinds of other sort of subconscious things, and we're there, we're processing. Our brain is really going around trying to figure out what they're saying. Maybe just trying to understand it. Maybe your brain is really going around trying to understand what I'm talking about. But that's cognition. Our brains are really processing what's coming in, and we're trying to figure it out. What's interesting, though, is that in this communication, these two actors are going to be thinking, figuring it out, and often they are going to figure it out. We're going to make a judgment on it. We're going to decide something about that conversation. And we'll wrap it up with this. Our emotional state is going to inform what that judgment is going to be often. If we are gracious and gentle and open toward that person, the judgment we make about what they are saying is going to be very different if we are anxious or a little upset or something like that. And so tomorrow we will pick up on effective communication skills. I often think of the simple, short psalm, and I'd like for this psalm to be something that we think about all week. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Thank you.